Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay. Now, I think we're everybody done with
bits? Upset.
Everybody good on the bathroom?
Uh-huh.
Because we're going to start recording. Uh-huh. We're going to start doing the show.
Recording.
And I'm not going to turn around. I'm not going
to pull over. Oh, you need me to start
recording?
I'm
not going to pull over. Liz, I am up to here. I will come back there. I'll come back there.
Okay, so I'll start recording now.
All right, folks. So we just finished When We Were Closest, and I believe that was the scene that Nathan won the bid.
Yes, I led that one. We had a very bloody clearing out of a red feather airship that was chasing us, and we had a very cool anime combat scene where we massacred most of the people on board and then badly needed a shower.
Yeah. So, Nathan, you are in a position, because you won the scene, you can either teach a lesson or change a heart. So, teach a lesson, this allows you to fill in one of Tyler's unfilled slots with something new, or change a heart, which allows you to alter a trait that was destroyed in conflict. Essentially, you can rewrite one of the crossed out traits that Tyler has, if you like. Which I believe the only one that is there right now is his rings. So you can replace the rings or just fill in a new trait for Calivar.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting or maybe directly appropriate to replace rings with like many Derringer pistols to match where we currently are. I think I'm going to go and add, especially considering how the last scene resolved with the kind of discussion of Oromar being a planner and Calivar being impulsive, but that impulsiveness is something that's kind of needed in the dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah.
Adding a new trait of what you value most about yourself to snatch the right choice out of thin air.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Because impulsive, open brackets, affectionate, close brackets is too simple. Let's make it spicy.
And I think I'll replace that two with an I.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah.
I snatched the right choice out of thin air.
Yeah. Sick. Cool. Love it. So now we are on to scene four. And this is When I Lost You. The first question that we have here is, what decision lays before you?
So this sits likely in the point where we start having major ideological conflict.
Yeah. And this is probably years after, a long time after the last scene. When you were at your closest, like that might have been the peak of the Oromar Calivar friendship, but it could have also plateaued there for a long time. This is definitely a period after the Bandit Queen is in the picture.
And we've had some very, I think, in Oromar's mind, fruitful and optimistic conversations about the idea of establishing a new society, a new way of living that just isn't really factoring in Calivar's own kind of like world beliefs.
Yeah, I think an important thing to note is like Kalvar and Orimar were aligned for a long time before the Bandit Queen came into the picture. The Bandit Queen, mm-hmm. like the main things that she brought to the table is she and Orimar together founded the Tempest Armada. And she has a very anarchistic approach to what the Tempest Armada intends to do with the world after the Red Feather Syndicate has been destroyed. Whereas Orimar is like, well, when the Red Feather Syndicate gets destroyed, we got to impose some laws on the land mm-hmm. so that the Red Feathers never come back. And that was the ideological difference between them. We do know at some point during the lifetime of the Uhuru being a part of the Tempest Armada, that is when Kalvar left. So we don't necessarily know what Kalvar's ideological beef was quite yet.
Mm.
And that might be something that we're revealing in this very scene. So the question that returns, like now that we know where we are in time, what decision lays before you?
Hmm.
Trying to think. I feel I'm over here trying to be like, all right, well, what? It's like if because Kalvar can't necessarily like leave to go join, like can't side with like the anarchists because that way he would join the Tempest Armada and like they'd be Gucci. But it's like, unless it's like, oh, well, do we strive for more anarchy than the anarchists?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be. You might want to maintain that anarchic philosophy, but not be part of an enterprise.
Presumably the theory or the thing that you had been operating on is like, we are going to depose the Red Feather Syndicate and there will be a Bandari style king in place of the syndicate. And probably the assumption for a long time was that king is going to be Orimar. But the thing that Kalvar might be like, I'm not on board for you being the king anymore.
Mm.
That could easily be the thing. I don't know that necessarily like the anarchy perspective is the Bandari perspective. It could even be like Kalvar's like, I want some kind of democratic process, or I don't want to be of a ruling class. I want to rove around the world and do good. And it kind of feels like that's what this job is going to be, is like directing armadas and whatnot instead of, you know, mixing it up.
Yeah. Would Orimar's like, I want to actually establish like a new working society. Do you think that is too far off from like the pre-existing order of having the Bandari king and like that ruling party? Is it something completely different, or is it like Orimar's take on that?
Because it feels like, oh, especially since this is a degree of ideological jousting, it feels like the Bandari king at this point, especially, is so A, a legend, and B, built entirely fired like oratory, like storytelling, meaning that there are probably more than one interpretation of what the Bandari kingdom was and did, and what the philosophy of the king was is maybe filtered slightly by the person that told it. And I can believe that we have maybe two understandings of that legend that are similar, but in some ways, unfortunately, irreconcilably different.
What decision lays before you? What is going to be the center of this argument that strikes at the core of this ideological difference that we have established between you two?
Sure. We're at a position where there is about to be, if things continue as they are, a big socio-political upheaval in Sphere, if our plans collectively go as they're supposed to. And in private conversations behind closed doors, Orimar has hinted at, and as they've become closer over time, become more open about discussing what Orimar's personal endgame is with Kalvar. Orimar has not mentioned this to Zephyr, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. I think the mystique is probably working for you there.
Uh-huh. And I think as Orimar continues to be about more casual or open about some of his, like, end game ideas with Kelevar is maybe causing concern.
Then the next question is, what wound had already been dealt between us? So this is something that has brought you, an event that brought you out of step, probably.
So depending on how we end up voting for this and who's control of the scene, I kind of want this to be more textbook definition intimate than some of the others. Yeah. And how does Kelevar feel? Because we were clearly together as an item before Oromar met the Bandit Queen, and that has now opened out into a more complicated polyamorous relationship.
And how does Kelevar, Kelevar has a mental, if not actual, like, checklist of the times in which, like, Kelevar put an ask out to the captain and Oromar was like, actually, me and Sifa are, like, doing a thing. And it's like we talked about this going into it. It was something that, like, seemed great, but then Kelevar very much, like, came to the realization that Oromar is a very hard person to share. And, like, and that he, no one likes that. Or at least Kelevar does not enjoy that.
Yeah, it's probably a thing that, like, Sifa grapples with, too. And I think, like, the thing that we have established about Oromar, the outside perception of Oromar, and I think from people who are grounded in different cultures, is that Oromar is a philanderer. Oromar is somebody who, has a reputation for being unfaithful in relationships, but it kind of seems like Bandari culture is more like into, like has an established cultural practice of polyamory or polygamy. It's like, yeah, you can have multiple relationships. So that perception of Oromar's character might actually be a cultural, like, misapprehension. However, what it comes down to, I think Kelevar was used to in the years of he and Oromar being in this relationship, of being Oromar's, like, core heart and soul.
Yes.
And with Sifa in the picture, that is more questionable than it has ever been. So the wound that exists between you is like, yeah, it's not that that Kelevar has trouble sharing Oromar. It's that Kelevar has trouble sharing Oromar with Sifa. Which makes sense.
Oromar falls in love with people who he feels he can ideologically, like, debate with. Like, if there's an intellectual friction in a good way, there's been ideological frictions in a bad way many times through Oromar's life. But the ones that are actually positive, he will fall for. And often people just haven't hit that note. And you've been the best person to have late night talks with about the dreams, future philosophy, legends. But there's now another person who can do that.
Yeah. I think Kelevar is a little torn with, like, culturally, we know this to be, like, a part of Bandari day to day, like polygamy, polyamory, like, exists. And, like, I think that's something that he grew up with. But in the again, like, the years' time of being kind of like the A1 person, like, in someone else kind of stepping up and, like, quickly rising those ranks, like, the hackles are just going up.
Yeah. So this is an interesting question then. Where did your heart truly reside? I guess this is for both of you to have your own individual answers.
I think Oromar's heart resides with both people. I don't think he feels complicated about this, which is probably the most frustrating thing. No, this is all happening exactly as it should. I get to have nourishing conversations with two people I care about very much. And the fact that they are different conversations is something that he also enjoys very much.
I think it's like I am learning that Kelevar is learning that, like, his heart resides exclusively with Oromar, and the trying to say otherwise is, like, that's causing internal friction.
Okay. And now, of course, we get to this last question. How did you look? at this point in your lives?
We're well cemented at this point. I think this is looking pretty close to present day, but pre-dead Orimar. Maybe fewer gold adornments in the hair. After all, they are trophies taken from the red feathers he's slain, and there are some in that gap between now and in the future. But he settled into his look of being an older, established, dad-bodied, but very muscular figure.
Probably not salt and pepper yet, maybe like one or two gray hairs, if any at all. Mm-hmm. But apart from that.
Hey, that can happen at any time. I'm already getting gray in my beard at this point, but yes.
I think, I guess, established, but not crocodile. I think Calavar is, he's rocking a very manicured, very thin mustache. It's like there's a lot of like natural just like upkeep. It's like kind of pencily thin. It's very tasteful, very hot. And then I think we're leaning into like he's got a bunch of like piercings like up and down his ear. That's that.
So it was a moment of blank. I was blank, and you can choose but or and you were blank. And so you'll be saying these, you know, about it. You'll each be saying this. It was a moment of whatever you decide. You will decide where you think you are, and you will decide, like, from your character's perception, where you think the other was.
All right. Bearing in mind of just general concept of safety tools and going slow and checking in as we go with this, it was a moment of post-coital bliss. I was up for talking the night away, and you were too.
Wow.
Yeah, great. It was a moment of research. I was uncertain, but you were resolute.
In this scene, because we are about to move on to the bidding, you may bid up to 3 times, but you may only make 1 bid to define. So this is a scene where if you want control of it, you will have to, and that is as a raise. So you can start the scene by defining a trait, but after that, you will only be able to define one more thing. If you want to raise beyond that, you will have to destroy things in order to raise. So decide on what your initial bid is going to be.
You taught me, and I guess this is for myself. Also, let me know if I'm not doing this right. You taught me I could soar higher than any skyship.
And Orimar, what are you going to bid?
I would never disregard those I love.
Perfect. Perfect. Ooh, wow. It is difficult to determine what is the more valuable bid.
Can I do a tiny add to mine?
Sure.
Just, you taught me that with you, I could soar higher than any skyship.
Okay.
I kind of feel like at this point, it kind of feels like Calavar's is more loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I will raise. Ha. This isn't in counter to what I previously said, but I can, if it does feel like it runs in counter in tone, I can change it. I will always be shamed by never truly listening to when Calavar's voice wavered.
Ooh. Ooh.
Ooh.
Spicy.
Yeah, that is spicy. Yeah, I think that leaves Orimar with the current top bid. Tyler, you have one more create bid and 2 destroy bids at your disposal. Keeping in mind the next scene, the only bids that you'll be able to make are 2 destroy. Apart from the one that starts the scene. So
myths. Oh wait, no. Can I give this myth to Orimar?
No. So this is only for you right now.
Dang it. All right. Myths. I once, under heavy influence from the night, let it slip that I wanted to be your only.
Oh. Ooh. that's good. And that's definitely
really good.
That's definitely control of the scene.
I so Nathan, raise.
two raises remain. Two raises remain, and the only thing you can do at this point is destroy.
I will destroy. I will only have someone to intellectually joust with you at my side.
Oh my god.
Because that's no longer true.
That's no longer true.
Yeah, Doug.
Wow. Ooh. Oh my goodness.
I'll destroy. I snatch the right choice out of thin air.
Oh, wow. Ooh, God. All right. Nathan, you have one raise remaining.
I am going to set that as my max bid. I am no longer going to raise.
So, Tyler, this means you have control of how this scene is going to end. And you will have the spoils of victory after the scene is over. But this is, we know, a scene where Orimar and Kalvar have just had a lovely time together, and they are having their philosophical discussions, where Orimar kind of thinks the evening is just going to be another lovely evening with a person that he cares about, but you are looking for something. You're uncertain. And you're testing Orimar's certainty. And by the end of this scene, like we do know the truth of the scene is this is when Kalvar lost Orimar and Orimar lost Kalvar. Now, you might have continued to travel together after that, or this might be when Kalvar goes, I can't do this anymore and leaves. I think all of that is kind of up in the air, which means it is up to you. If you can reveal that at the top of the scene if you like, or we can hop right into the dialogue to see how the scene goes.
I feel like there's maybe some kind of like, in whatever phase they're in currently, Orimar and Kalvar on the you know, once in a... on the times in which the ship is docked and like there is actually a time to be had and like a good time and like... you know, whatever, what have you, they found that it's kind of fun to, like, before they go out that night, to draw a luminary and, like, have that, like, influence the night.
Mm.
And,
wow, yeah.
And I feel like there was, in the heat of, like, you know, the concluding of the night, them having a lovely time together, like, someone, like, they're just kind of, like, joking about, like, oh, you really, what's a luminary that, like, you could call upon in the bedroom that feels like, oh, I'm about to resulca that ass.
Yes.
Okay. So
who is the horniest luminary?
I think that's what there
are a couple options for you in terms of horny luminaries. There is the union, which is like has a romantic and community connotation to it. For a more darker appetite, there is the rake, which represents like kind of overindulgence. The idea that like you desire so much, you stray into desiring more than can be offered or more than a person should take. There is the Forest Queen, which has a connotation of dominance to it. There is the Rusalka, which has a connotation of temptation to it.
I mean, Rusalka might be the one. This is feeling more of a Jill Scott evening than a Megan Thee Stallion evening. for those who that matters to.
Love that. Amazing.
Hey, both evenings are great. It's just
you're having a good night, regardless.
But no, this is much more of a chill. Rasulka's a cool energy for this. Then, you know, this is definitely a rope smoking, staying up late, chatting kind of night. I think maybe. But hey, yeah, that's your scene.
That's temptation, and desire, and longing. So it kind of suggests that you are maybe shirking some responsibilities to have a good time.
Yeah. And then I think so that's happened. And then I think maybe we're just kind of just chatting afterwards. And then maybe Orimar is kind of joking, or is like, I told you I could summon Rasulka anytime I wanted to, or something like that. And then I think that tees up a conversation of could he actually?
That
opens the door to your big ambitions and all that jazz.
What can I say? I'm a tempting force. I know that you had other responsibilities this evening, but I'm glad I could drag you away.
The ship will descend into anarchy by the morning sun. It's all you're doing.
Ugh. Well, this is why we employed Bothram Barry.
He's been on the ship for just a couple of months now. Delightful. Truly delightful.
One of the good ones. I mean, there's a dismissive wave of the head. All of them are the good ones, but I think one of your best picks yet, considering how impulsive you can be.
Impulsive, says the man that says he can call out to the luminaries in the bedroom.
I'm one to take on the aspects as desired, and they listen, clearly.
Clearly. You aspire to so much. You claim so much. You're such drive. It hangs in the air for a second. And yet you still, you want to leave it all behind in the end.
Well, while I'm not a selfish lover, in some instances I do have to be looking after my own ends. And it's for the greater good, of course.
Greater good, greater good. Calivar takes another sip of brandy. What? And this is just shooting from the hip. What is the greatest good? If in your all ambitious eyes, to put in the work, to drive, to push, to maim, to steal, to establish what we were missing, what was taken from us all those years ago, and just to walk away, what is that good? What good is that doing?
I just want to sow the seed. You know, when people are lost and directionless, when they don't have a Calivar or a Sifa in their lives to give them some direction, to give them something to look to and know that they are empowered to grow themselves.
But what
I'm good, fortunate I have you both. I feel so lucky.
But what good is it ultimately if you establish yourself as this beacon, as this person, as this entity, this idea, and then just to leave everyone? We've seen what happens when the people that rise to the ranks and the people of legend go away. Stories get misconstrued. Ideas get tangled. The things that we intend to be good and stay good, well, then that's just left up to the scrappy kids on the street with, you know, an empty belly and surrounded by marks. I'm saying this, it will go back to chaos. It will go back. We came from what it descends into. It always does this. I feel like you're so grateful. You're so grateful about having me, and you're grateful about having her, but you're not thinking far enough ahead, which is crazy that I'm saying this about you.
There's a confused smile from Orimar this isn't how he was expecting this conversation to go and is unsure of how you're feeling. Caliver, don't worry. I don't intend to just disappear out of your life, out of the lives of the Uhuru, out of the lives of the Tempest Armada. I want to stay here. He walks across the room to you and runs a finger down your chest and leaves it where your heart is. I will always remain.
A thing that might sting about this, Caliphar, is that the Bendari people, in important conversations, always speak with their hearts exposed to prove that they are not a demon. So touching a person's heart as a gesture of sincerity might be a very Sifa thing.
Ooh. Caliphar looks down to the hand that is on his chest. There's a beat. He looks up very expectant at Orimar, like, why is this still on my chest? And then I feel like if it still hangs there, Caliphar is like, I don't know where you... He goes to, like, kind of very, like, definitively, but, like, kind of, like, daintily, like, grab Orimar's, like, wrist and remove it, the hand from his chest. Like, I don't know where you picked this up, but it wasn't from me, and it wasn't from us.
She really is rubbing off on me. He puts his hand behind his neck and bashfully look away. Even with his deep skin tone, you can tell he's blushing.
I just think that you have a little too much faith in what people do in the absence of guidance. I think you are, and you are beautiful and idealistic and also foolish.
There's a moment of hanging in Orimar's voice as this feels like to him one of our ideological jousts, and so has moved out of an emotive discussion now into an ideological and tactical one. See, you should tell Sifa that. I've been trying to tell her that actually establishing a form of order and not having complete anarchy after we get what we want is important, and you clearly agree with me. If you came with me to have a speak with her next I went to go and see her, I think we'd actually have a very productive
discussion.
I'm not
going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Why not?
Right? Because we occupy two different parts of your brain and your heart. One that I don't feel inclined to rush mixing, right? She wants everything to just be anarchy. You want to have some rules. I want something even further than that. You want to make the rules and then leave. Like, I want to make the rules and then stay. That's the only way that people are going to, that this will persist, that this will outlive us if we are there to remind them of all the work that we did, to continue to give guidance.
And you can do that. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be there to steer people when they're looking to others. I'm just saying that ultimately, I don't want to be encased in a block of glass to be turned to as a singular thing to, like, be the reminder. I want people to be empowered, to be reminded without me having to be a physical object for them to turn to. If you want to be that, that's fine. I don't want to stop you from doing anything you don't want to do.
It's... Orimar, if there were anyone else on this planet that could do what you do, I would say yes, but you... This whole ship is in the sky because of you. People take up arms because of you. People follow because of you.
It's because of us. It's not just me. It could never just be me. Do you remember when it was just me? When I was threatening to chase you down for being a free person because I'd forgotten what that felt like? I can't operate just alone. I'd just be, what, knots if it was just me.
I feel like you stopped being knots so long ago. Yes, you were... Calavar searches for the word dumb. You were also a child. I feel like you, in that time, you've grown up. And you are the measure of a person that we should be aspiring to. I want it to be you. I think we all want it to be you. I need it to be you. If it's not you, then who?
And Orimar, this echoes some concerns that Sifa has floated. The idea that if after the Red Feathers fall, you were to establish any power that were to exist, that even if you were the greatest king imaginable by any human imagination, eventually you will die. And if that power exists, it will be replaced. And there is no guarantee for what comes afterwards.
This is one of the conversational jousts that Orimar is losing. And a tactic that you know that he likes to do is to try and back out and make it a draw. And so he says, you two are actually so alike in really interesting ways. I generally think it would be great for you to talk to her. I think find a lot in common. I should go speak to Bathroom Barry and apologize for your extended absence. And he goes over to you to kiss you before he leaves the room.
Calavar like leans back as like, do not sheath your sword. Like, we're not done now. Mm-hmm. All right. I need you to know that it's getting harder and harder to continue to you are the captain. You are the captain of this ship, and so I will follow you. But it is getting harder and harder to follow someone who makes it increasingly known that they don't want to lead in the end. And I'm not interested in expanding this council further. I don't want to meet her. I don't want to talk with her.
And I think what was... Even in the micro expressions, you can read Orimar so well. And you could tell when he realized he was on the back foot. And I think you can now tell that you have broken something by saying that. His eyebrows knead in a way that you very rarely see. I don't know who you're trying to hurt, but be careful where you carelessly slash your sword, if you will. So insistent on making this a duel, you hurt more people than you realize. He turns and he will leave unless you say or do something, but yeah, he's making an exit.
I think Calavar takes another drink of the brandy and lets Orimar go.
Then the question that I have for you, Tyler, how does it end up? Is this the night that Calavar leaves? Scotty
Furthermore, I shall require that you source, recruit, and hire one attractive man and one attractive woman and one attractive person who shirks the confines of pedestrian genders, of ages and temperament within a suitable range of my own, for my company, entertainment, and convenience. Furthermore, we shall require one not quite attractive man, one equally or slightly more attractive woman, and one or two persons whose attractiveness is not bound by genderedness. And... one random personage of your own choosing, to keep things interesting. That is to say, brother, on long journeys such as that upon which I shall soon embark, often linger in the most dull and uninteresting of times and means, and I intend not to lose the sharpness of my focus to doldrums real or imagined. Therefore, I propose that these persons be hired aboard one or more of my ships, that I may bear witness to their inevitable romantic entanglements, or lack thereof, during the quite long and tiresome stretches of the journey, when conversations are otherwise quite lacking. These persons must not be made aware of the true nature of their presence aboard the ship, lest the reality of their situation, comedy, romance, or lack thereof, and dramatics shall be tainted or otherwise altered by myself or any other who may observe them in their most vulnerable experiences of forced close proximity in duty and lack of sufficient number of beds in their shared quarters. Perhaps even mysterious past circumstances that link two or more of them together, which shall be discovered in due time. Whoever these persons are, whatever their ways and means be, elder brother, I sincerely beseech you do not enclose any information regarding them unto me, that I may better enjoy the thrill of the chase in understanding them in the course of their journey, even with their petty machinations, heartbreaks, and revealing confrontations. Let it never be said that I do not support the arts. I simply do not do so on a subtle scale that even paid actors would fully perceive of in my hand. No, these tormented survivors of love at first sight may not be married within 90 days of their first encounter, nor may they find themselves here to make friends. But they will have stories to tell of their experience, for better or worse, and therefore so shall I and my crew. For it is we who shall perceive their every move and analyze their coded dialogues with one another in search of their true feelings for one another in the face of danger and adversity. Naturally, this is not the same as watching two people fall in love with their blades crossed in the middle of a storm on the battlefield of a deck of an airship. But there are few highs to rival witnessing that, I dare say. Furthermore, I will have individual chambers on each ship in my fleet for not only myself but also my additional staff, and these shall be fitting for all and orderly, and thereby not pestering my things with my staff's, nor their things with the ship's crew's things, nor the ship's crew's things with the aviarist's belongings, and so on. All things have a place, brother mine, and we must abide accordingly, lest we lose our way and prove those who would subvert our way to be right. Furthermore, when we depart each stop along our way, I would have my aviarists and my warbirds sent afore me to seek knowledge and conditions of the path before us, that we may better understand weather patterns, traffic of other vessels, and additional circumstantial information which may or may not prove vitally useful in the pursuit of my quarry. Furthermore, for myself, besides funds, ships, birds, men, dogs, and supplies already requested, I would have 20 suits of apparel, 6 of them excellent good ones, of fine cut and cloth, 8 of them for the country, the mountains, the valleys, the deserts, with appropriate fabrics and embroidered trappings, signifying thus, and 6 other of them of exceedingly excellent good-fashioned ones, for use in terms of heightened required dress code, and indeed suitable to wear on special occasions in Aurum and beyond. Furthermore, I would have you put in each of my ships an additional 1,000 bars of gold in the interest of paying for incidental needs and replacement of sundry items. Furthermore, I will have use of our family's name to leverage the purchasing of fine gold trim and tassels to be used upon my warbirds, tack and trappings, as befitting the youngbloods in frontline efforts. Furthermore, as I have been, and indeed continue to be so reasonable unto you, brother, I ask that you see fit to provide my armada's personnel with appropriate wages, housing, outfitting, and so on. Not only the staff, but the aeroners, the officers, the furnaciers, the aviarists, and dog keepers. Furthermore, I will have all my ships furnished, and my lodging chambers be suited with all such furniture as shall meet my use. Beds, stools, chairs, suitable cushions, carpets, silver trays and utensils, including cupboards, fair hangings, and decorations and such. For my drawing room chambers on each ship, I shall have them most delicately and tastefully furnished, with fine hangings, couch, canopy, glass, carpets, chairs, cushions, and all things thereunto rightfully belonging for my own taste. Furthermore, my desire is that you would remember what good siblings we have been and shall be. that you may not be swayed from our purpose ultimate by naysayers or men whose minds cannot conceive of our truest victory. Remember what some have said regarding the Youngblood name, our lineage, our proud works, our reputation, our behavior perceived, and indeed recall that many would die for a grasp at our strength. But worse too, many would kill. Have a keen eye towards the untrusted, brother, and recall too that the call of greed can sometimes be found echoing within the halls of one's own house and abode too, notwithstanding one's own trust or lack thereof. So, brother, now that I have declared in no uncertain terms to you what I would have and what I would not have, I pray that when you be prudent about your sums, that you would consider the wealth I would bring to our family and yield unto me 2,000 bars more than I have already asked of you, and be generously thankful for my own efforts and grace, and double the attendance of our staff and workers too. Ever your favorite sister, Olivia Youngblood.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com.
Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Tyler is on strike alongside his fellow members of the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. You can support Tyler and other striking artists by contributing to the Entertainment Community Fund, linked in our show notes. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. Or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at @DreamsToBecome, or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny. The call of the skies.